So before the break, we did that little practice with the breathing and the elements, and maybe with different coloured light, depending on whether you wanted to go in that direction. Partly as just a shamatha exercise, a chance to just settle a bit more deeply, and yeah, it's quite a healing way to practice. So it's good to do early in a retreat like this when we're coming from sometimes quite difficult situations and been a bit battered by life. But it also sort of took us in the direction of the six element practice. We were working with five of the elements and being aware of that they're out there in the world around us and taking them in and consciously not holding on to them as I or me or mine, but freely breathing them out, letting them go. So there was that sense of exchange. So that's, yeah, gets us in the ballpark, gets us in the area of the six element practice. So earlier this year, Vijayamala and I did a little retreat at our place in Cambridge, which we called Working with the Elements. And one of the reasons why certainly I wanted to do that was because I don't very often make the opportunity to teach in the area of the elements and six element practice, and I like to keep sort of going into areas that I don't feel I've explored very much. So we had a week doing that, and we had 8 board members on the retreat, and we had a reporting in at the beginning, and we, as part of their reporting in, asked them to say, you know, whether they connected with the six element practice. And one of them did. So 12.5% isn't too good, I suppose. So we were just interested in what the situation was with those other people. And it seemed to boil down to about sort of 4 main issues. One was some people found it a very kind of cognitive practice. Too many words was how one person put it. Some people were unclear about what it was that they were supposed to be doing or achieving in the last stage of the practice, when you get to consciousness, you know, what is going on there. Some people found quite a lot of boredom with it, sleepiness, doing it and then running out of steam. And then for some people it brought up nihilism. You know, once you've given away the body, there wasn't much left really. So those issues all seemed to get in the way of it being an effective way of practicing for people. So that being the case, you know, here you are on this retreat on the elements with all these people who certainly don't connect with the six element practice as usually done. So we, Vijayamala and I, kind of backtracked and I went back basically to, well, with any practice that you do, you need to know really, first off, what it is that it's aiming to achieve. What is it that, you know, when you go deeply into it, when it goes well, what will you experience? Where is it trying to take you to? And then, once that's clear, how does this practice think that it's going to take you to this positive goal? And then thirdly, if you're clear about where the practice is aiming to take you and how it's trying to get you there, how can you make it your own so that it actually works for you to do that? So we spent quite a bit of time just exploring those three. Because the six element practice, in a way, as I see it, I mean, it has a number of functions which we'll probably explore as time goes on. But for me, the practice ends up in the same place as if I do a sadhana practice and really relax into the vast blue sky. Or it ends up in the same place as if I do a metta bhavana, and at the end, again, there's a spacious, loving, open awareness. Or if I practice just sitting and I open out all the senses, and so there's just this open space of awareness, so to speak, which includes everything that's happening, but that awareness is quite sort of choiceless, so I'm not holding on to anything in particular, just allowing experience to come and go. As far as I can see, when the practice of the six element practice goes well, at the end, you're left in that space where there's open awareness, which is not identified with anything in particular. Experience hasn't disappeared. There is still experience. Experience never totally disappears. And yeah, the mind is really open because there's no identification. And so everything is flowing, and it's a state of great freedom and great relaxation because there's no holding on to anything. So I think that's where the practice is, wants to take us. Along the way, we can learn a lot of other things through it. But fundamentally, it seems to me that it's, you know, as we let go of identification with the body, with territory, with my space, with my mood, my emotions, my memories, my thoughts, my mental images, etc., etc., even the idea of my consciousness, that's no longer kind of holding on to any of those contents, allows the mind to open and to be really free. So we end up, so to speak, in that open dimension of things. And the practice works. Well, it's almost like there's a lot of different ways into how things are woven into one practice with the six element practice. First off, yeah, all right, let's go through a few of them quickly. First off, let's go back to my watch. The practice aims to be, well, Mr. Chen, who taught it to Bantam, as far as I know, presented it as an antidote to pride, but it's more than an antidote to pride, it's an antidote to self-clinging altogether. And clinging to a sense of a fixed self that is in control. So if I want to know whether there's anything fixed about something, like for instance, if I want to know whether this watch inherently exists, there are two main approaches that I can take. We're back to the Survey of Buddhism, chapter one, I seem to remember. One is there's a sort of analytical approach, which is basically, if this watch is going to exist in and of itself, I mustn't be able to break it down into bits, because if it comes apart, then where's the watch in that? It's just going to end up being a collection of bits. So I could start dismantling it. I could take the bracelet off and the face off and the dial off and get in there somehow, and I'm just going to be left with a collection of bits. And where is the watch in that? And once we know that things can come apart, those things can scatter. So there's nothing which makes it inherently a watch. So that's one approach. I break it down. It's a sort of microcosm approach. The other one is I can look at the big picture. And the big picture is what Banti calls, the dynamic synthetic approach, whereby you look at, for this watch to just always be a watch, it mustn't be subject to conditions. If it's subject to conditions, then when those conditions change, it's going to cease to be a watch. So this watch is dependent upon various, all kinds of conditions. So for instance, it's dependent on the temperature in this room staying within a very wide range. But if the temperature in this room, if this room is struck by a meteorite, then the temperature and the pressure in this room will go up extraordinarily. And this watch will no longer be a watch. It will just be molten metal or whatever, or it'll be just nothing that you can find. Yeah. It's also dependent on me deciding to keep it as a watch and not taking a sledgehammer to it. Yeah, that's another condition. Another condition for it being a watch is my concept of it as a watch, but we'll leave that aside for now. So you get the idea. Yeah, there's both a microcosmic sort of analytical breaking things down way of approaching things, and let's look at the big picture, seeing conditions, macrocosm approach. And the six-element practice kind of combines them both. In a way, it breaks down what we think of as me and says, well, there's an earth element, there's water element, fire element, space, air, and consciousness. So those having come together, at some point they will come apart. So what I think of as me seems to be a process rather than anything inherently existing. And then also, that's the breaking things down approach, there's also looking at the big picture, where these six elements actually depend upon the elements out there to continue as they are. So these six elements need replenishing with more of the earth element for all that muesli I eat for breakfast and so on. All the water element. There being enough kind of heat in the environment around. Air, I need to keep taking it in. There being some space to operate in. And all those, all that I think of as my thinking, I've taken in nearly all of those ideas and so on from all kinds of people, starting with my parents, my teachers, Bante, all sorts of other people, the media, etc., etc. Yeah. So I'm in what I think of as me is in constant interplay with what I think of as other. And the six-element practice is reminding us of that again and again in different ways. And then along the way, as if that wasn't enough, it also throws in a whole element about impermanence and death. It's also a contemplation of impermanence and dying, that these elements that constitute what I think of as me, one day I take in the air element and it goes out. And that was it. And then the elements of the body will all just go back to the world around. So there's also a further kind of poking at this sense of, you know, I'm here, I'm me, I'm like this, I've always been like this, always will be. All that delusion that I might foster, is being challenged in several different ways by the practice. So there's the analytical breaking things down, there's the looking at the big picture, the conditionality, there's impermanence, there's stuff about interconnectedness, connected with the conditionality, and so on. There's an awful lot of good stuff in there. And yet, 7 out of 8 of our, our guinea pigs, that's not the right word, the people on our retreat, didn't really connect with it. So over the next day, I'd like to look more in practice at how the practice could work, how we managed to prevent it from working, and how we could make it our own. So is that clear, what I've said? I mean, that, you know, raises issues about how we do it and all sorts of things, but just as an analysis of how it aims to be as a practice.
Sandra, could you just say the second one again, please?
The second one was the big picture one, the macrocosm one, yeah? So that was seeing things in terms of conditionality. Yeah. So when we're selfing, as I tend to call it, strongly, there's a sense that there's something about us which kind of isn't conditioned, which isn't affected by, which isn't just part of the flow of conditions. It somehow stands behind that or is in the middle of that. So that's challenged by being aware of how everything which we can find about ourselves depends upon an interchange with the world outside. So I didn't just appear sort of magically like this, you know. This is all made up of, you know, what I ate, what I drank, the air that I breathed, my moods, my emotions. They don't happen independently of everything out there. My thoughts, you know, all that. I mean, even a lot of my kind of creative thoughts about the Dharma, you know, that I think I've just had, I subsequently discover in something that I read of Bhante's, you know, sort of like 30 years ago. There's a, there's an interplay constantly going on. So that sort of takes apart that sense of me as independent entity, somehow in control of all this. Because if we want to look into the self that Buddhism says you won't find, that self is, the self that Buddhism denies, if you like, is single, is lasting, and has some measure of control. It has some Aishvarya, it's able to control things. So the sixth element practice is challenging that sense of self. Okay, reasonably clear so far. All right, let's do another little practice then before we finish for the afternoon. So I'll be doing these guided meditations quite a bit in these sessions, but If you don't want to be guided, or if I'm guiding you in a direction which doesn't feel like the one you need to go in, then just ignore me. Okay, so I think what we're going to do now is something a bit closer to the six element practice, but maybe not about us. Maybe some of this will be clearer. So we're going to start with just letting everything rest. It's a bit like we take one big out breath and let it all go. Let the body rest, we let the mind rest. making sure we're well grounded. Making sure our posture is one which supports awareness, which supports a free flow of energy in the body as best we can. Let's spend a couple of minutes with the body, with the breathing. The relaxed awareness. invite you to do a little reflection. And to do this, it would be good if we thought of someone who we don't know very well, who we're not particularly close to, but for whom we have some positive feeling. Just feeling, just sensing that person, maybe a sense of how they move, how they speak, any mannerisms, facial expressions, things they tend to wear. Anything which helps make them real for you. So there they are, this person who thinks of themselves as I and me, just as we do, who's at the center of their world, just as we are. Firstly, let's just be aware of their body in the sense that it's made up of the four elements. And just as if we were doing a little quick six-element reflection, just being aware of how that body is made up of solids, a flowing element, fluid element, heat, air. All that's been taken in terms of whatever it is they really like to eat, to drink, how they breathe, they may not realize it. But they're in a dynamic interplay with life. They're part of life, they're not separate from it. And one day those elements will go back. Seeing if we can do this reflection with metta. Not a forced kind of metta, just a simple human sympathy. And similarly, this person feels like they have a certain space. It's kind of their territory. The space the body takes up. Kind of personal space around the body. Room or the place where they live. And yet none of that's really finally theirs. And then there's all the ways they feel, the ways they think, their memories, their imaginings for the future. And all that's a constant flow, constantly changing. And yet out of it they create a sense of a solid self, somehow at the centre of all this. So there's this flowing experience, part of life, part of the dance of life, which somehow feels that it's separate, so let's just reflect a little on how it would be if this person learnt not to be identified. Supposing that they somehow learnt not to see the body as I or me or mine. Would they be bothered about how they look? Would they get caught up in their aches and pains? Would they be anxious about getting older? Would they be afraid of death? And how would it be if they weren't attached, identified with their space? Would that remove another level of anxieties and concerns? Would they be freer? And how would it be if their awareness wasn't identified, wasn't caught up anywhere? Not with the body, not with space, not with the thinking, not with the emotions, the mood. How would that be? Now we can just wish that person well and relax, not making any effort, nothing to do, no need to reflect.